From South Dakota Public Broadcasting, this is your SDPB News Podcast. I'm Jackson Dirks at the State Capitol Building in Pierre. Today we have updates from South Dakota's 101st legislative session. At the State Capitol today, lawmakers want you to decide on the powers of the Lieutenant Governor. A House committee takes a look at penalties for doxing. Appropriators analyze the fiscal impact of covering some school lunch costs and more. It's Monday, February 23rd. Here are today's stories. A proposal which could radically reshape the South Dakota Senate has cleared its first legislative challenge in the Senate State Affairs Committee. If passed, the burden of deciding would fall on the shoulders of the state's voters. SDPB's CJ Keene reports.
The proposal would put to voters a single question. Should the Lieutenant Governor be the presiding officer of the South Dakota Senate? For prime sponsor, Republican Senator Steve Kolbeck, allowing the body to select who holds the gavel is simply fairer.
It would be up to the majority party on how they want to run the Senate. It would be up to the Senate on how they would do that. My envision would be it would be run just like the House. They would have a speaker and an assistant speaker. You'd have a president, assistant president, or you could have a president, president pro tem. All of those types of options are open, but that would be in the rulemaking for the next Senate to decide.
This comes on the heels of a legal battle between the Senate and the governor's office after the lieutenant governor cast a tie-breaking vote on a piece of legislation. The decision over whether the lieutenant governor has authority went to the state Supreme Court. Justices ruled the lieutenant governor can vote to break ties. Kolbeck says this is not a personal attack on Lieutenant Governor Tony Van Huysen. Nathan Sanderson, executive director of the State Retailers Association, says he believes Kolbeck. However, he's not sure if voters will buy into this battle. Sanderson says, if it ain't broke.
For the entirety of South Dakota's history, we've had this structure where the lieutenant governor has presided over the Senate. It has worked. There's nothing broken here. We're going to have up to 13 constitutional amendments on the ballot. This is one of those items that just isn't necessary, and we don't think that it should go on the ballot.
Considering the odd number of sitting senators, tie-breaking votes from the lieutenant governor have been rare throughout state history. There's been some ties this year because one lawmaker, Senator Arch Beal, has been out all session due to illness. The bill passed committee with no dissenting votes. I'm SDPB's CJ Keene in Pierre.
Police officers and judges would be protected from doxing if a new bill becomes law. A House committee advances that bill, but kills similar protections for legislators. The House Judiciary Committee looked at protections for some against doxing. Doxing refers to the act of revealing information about a person online publicly, typically to harass, stalk, or intimidate them. The committee voted against a bill that makes it a felony to publicly disseminate the employment, home, or school address or location of a publicly elected office holder and their immediate family members. Concerns over such information have been raised following the June shootings of Minnesota state lawmakers. Opponents questioned the bill's constitutionality under the First Amendment and said it could put local newspaper coverage of public officials in conflict with the law. Sioux Falls Democrat Representative Kaden Whitman shared her thoughts after motioning to kill it.
I'm one of the very few Democrats in our legislature, so I think it's clear that I'm not unfamiliar with feeling vulnerable in this area. But this is what I signed up for, with public service. I believe it is public, and I believe that our constituents have the right to know who represents them, where we are, and how to reach us. And I don't necessarily view transparency as a threat. I think it's more of a cornerstone for our accountability. We already have laws that address threats, stalking, and harassment.
The committee rejected House Bill 1305, 11-2. However, House Judiciary threw its support behind House Bill 1298. It prohibits the electronic publishing of a law enforcement officer or judge's home address, date of birth, or social security number. Doing so would be punishable by up to 2 years in prison. That's if it's to put the officer or their family in reasonable fear of death or great bodily injury. That language comes from the First Amendment, which protects most speech so long as it's not a true threat. Katie Herska is with the governor's office. She explains the need for HB 1298.
All across the country and in South Dakota, law enforcement officers and judges are being targeted, threatened, stalked, and doxed. How we are engaging with each other and with our judicial system in this country and in this state is elevating the degree of dangerous threats and actual assaults.
It passes unanimously out of committee and heads to the House floor. I'm SDPB's Jackson Dirks in Pierre. A long-fought battle expanding South Dakota's free and reduced school lunch program has cleared the House Appropriations Committee. The bill has been championed for the last 4 years by Sioux Falls Democratic Representative Kaden Whitman. In 2026, the bill saw a swell of bipartisan support. It was an amended version which included the requested fiscal note that cleared appropriators. Committee member, Democratic Representative Eric Mucky, explains.
This was addressing a question from the bill hearing where the Department of Education brought concerns about the cost differential between service providers at individual school districts. This clarifies in Section 3 that the gap that would be paid under this bill would just be the gap between full price and reduced price, so that we could be very clear we're paying for just that amount of money. So it would be approximately $630,000 a year.
It passed committee on a 7-2 vote. Lawmakers in the State House of Representatives revive a bill repealing the committee overseeing the state's medical marijuana program. House Bill 1160 was killed in committee. Lawmakers forced the bill to the House floor in a procedure called a smokeout. They actually debated the bill on the floor today. Opponents of repeal argued the Oversight Committee is still bearing fruit. Among other things, they tout the Department of Health announcing digital medical marijuana cards as a win. They also point to other bills the committee is bringing. Proponents of the bill say there's no longer a need for the Oversight Committee now that South Dakota's medical marijuana program is running. Both agree to some extent in the past year the Oversight Committee became contentious. Proponents won out and the House advances the bill 41-26. HB 1160 heads to the Senate. At the request of the Supreme Court, a House committee kills a bill creating an easier path to becoming a lawyer. House Bill 1270 would have created a legal apprenticeship pathway program. USD law students would have had to successfully complete 675 hours of a supervised apprenticeship under an attorney in South Dakota. In return, students could receive a license to practice in South Dakota without taking the bar exam. They would need to perform at least 50 hours of pro bono services annually for 5 years. Proponents say it's a targeted way to tackle the shortage of attorneys in rural South Dakota and eliminates the, quote, unnecessary barrier of the bar exam. The Unified Judicial System opposed the bill, saying the Supreme Court should have the authority to make such a program, not the legislature. Opponents also argued the bill does nothing to address geographical distributions of attorneys in the state. The House Judiciary Committee killed the bill 10-3. The Senate Tax Committee advances what some call the first major TIF work done in over a decade. It went unopposed. Senate Bill 228 was deemed a true compromise where no party walked away happy, but all walked away content. The bill makes discretionary grants for TIF or tax increment financing districts specified through an agreement between businesses and government bodies. It also requires a true independent third party to conduct a public fiscal feasibility review on any TIF. The review would lay out things like costs, timing, and reasonability of a TIF project. Senator Taffy Howard led a fight against the Liberty Land TIF district in Rapid City. She says she thinks that fight spurred people to come to the table.
I would say, you know, some people that I may, on the other side of the issue maybe, saw that, okay, Liberty Land showed the flaws in the system. So they were more willing to come to the table, and we desperately, we wanted some changes made. So it was just a perfect storm, if you will. Liberty Land showed the flaws in the TIF in tax increment financing, and changes were coming. So that just spurred everybody to say, okay, I want to be involved so I can help direct and see that the changes that come out are good for everyone. And I think we arrived at that point.
The 12-page long bill heads to the Senate floor after unanimous committee approval. The House State Affairs Committee advances a bill to tighten the grip on South Dakota's already strict abortion policy. However, opponents say it runs the risk of over-prosecution. SDPB CJ Keene has more.
The bill came on the heels of the May Day Health ad campaign that ran across the state, which saw the organization place marketing linking South Dakotans to resources related to abortion, among other things. Republican Representative John Hughes spoke in favor of the bill Friday.
1274C criminalizes this bad behavior and provides the Attorney General with enforcement tools to prosecute, to obtain injunctive relief, and to collect civil penalties for these bad actors.
It follows the ongoing legal battle between May Day and the state, which recently was returned to South Dakota judges after a New York federal court found they lacked jurisdiction in the state. Attorney General Marty Jackley, who spoke in favor of this bill, says he doesn't believe it's redundant considering the state's strict abortion policy. Instead, this brings federal partners in on this kind of investigation.
There are already laws in place that make it illegal to mail these chemicals It's a class 6 felony, which is a 2-year felony in South Dakota. So the activity that Mayday is advertising or allegedly advertising and soliciting, that's already an illegal activity, so it would not affect that.
However, Justin Bell, lobbyist representing the State Medical Association, says the language of this bill is too vague.
It can mean various different things in different situations, but there's a criminal solicitation, which essentially states a solicitation essentially is asking somebody, it commands, hires, requests, or solicits another person to engage in specific conduct. What that means is, with the amendment of this bill, you've now criminalized every pregnant woman who asks someone to do this.
Historically, pro-life advocates have opposed criminalization of pregnant women, which was seen earlier this session with the defeat of a bill seeking to provide criminal penalties for women who obtain an abortion. Despite these concerns, an amended version of the bill was passed on a vote of 10-2. It next heads to the House floor. I'm SDPB's CJ Keene.
A House committee wants to give employers the opportunity to opt out of the fee associated with the pool of money at the governor's disposal. State statute requires employers pay a fee on the taxable employee wages every quarter. Those dollars are pooled into a fund often called the Future Fund. The fund has been a point of controversy as some have questioned the merit of some governors' uses of it. House Bill 1230 looks to make payments into that fund optional. Opponents call that a dangerous precedent for tax policy. Mike Bockerny is CEO of the South Dakota Economic Development Professionals. He calls it a philosophical debate.
However, we would contend that this legislature hears from numerous citizens and groups about their philosophical opposition to countless taxes, fees, tax exemption, and other funding mechanisms as well. For example, in the last 2 years, many South Dakotans have objected to the concept of property taxes or pushed for schools, counties, and cities to be slashed. They have described these objections as philosophical. If you let one group get to opt out based on their philosophical position, we contend that you might be emboldening all the other groups to request the same.
However, the bill's prime sponsor doesn't see it that way. Representative Carla Lems tells SDPB her goal is to make the fee cognizant for employers since she says many don't know they pay into it.
Well, I don't think it is because you have property taxes that are funding things like education that are in our state constitution. I mean, those are things you can really make the case for, yes. I mean, these are things we're paying for, roads, bridges, things that the public uses. And I would say this is very different than the employer's investment fee that they're paying. So I think it's apples and oranges.
It receives the House State Affairs Committee's stamp of approval 7-4. It dies on the House floor after a 31-36 vote. Senate Bill 96, Governor Larry Roden's stab at tackling the property tax debate, lives through Senate taxation. It's just one proposal in a sea of pitches covering the matter. SDPB's CJ Keene reports.
Though property taxes are perhaps the premier debate of the 2026 legislative session, there's no mandate lawmakers must pass anything this legislative cycle. The governor's plan offers a targeted approach to property tax relief, namely giving residents a chance to supplement lower property taxes with a local sales tax increase. Jim Terwilliger, commissioner of the State Bureau of Finance and Management, asks rhetorically, why let this decision fall to voters on a county-by-county basis?
That total burden is about $254 million. Of that total burden, almost 60%, about $150 million of that burden falls in three counties, Minnehaha, Pennington, and Lincoln County. You can see that the total tax burden varies greatly from one county to the other. A targeted approach to this problem, we think, makes a lot of sense. Looking at the data, trying to distribute property tax relief fairly and equally across the state, doesn't really seem that that can be done fairly when you look at the data.
It's a plan that has support, but also a significant opposition faction. That faction includes many key members of the state House leadership and lobbies. Nathan Sanderson is the executive director of the State Retailers Association. On the contrary to Roden's camp, he contends the bill is not targeted.
For a good portion of the state, rural areas are going to be subsidizing the growth in these counties. How so? Well, if Minnehaha or Lincoln County implements this, they increase their sales tax by 0.5%. Any individual who doesn't live in those counties, who then spends money in those counties, is using their sales taxes, their dollars, to subsidize property taxes for the owner-occupied homeowners in those counties.
The Senate Taxation Committee advanced the bill on a unanimous vote, though several lawmakers voiced concerns about the proposal. It next heads to the Senate floor. I'm SDPB's CJ Keene.
A House committee is advancing a bill resurrected from being killed in committee earlier this session. It cleans up unintended consequences from a bill made law last session. In 2025, lawmakers passed a law to modify changing room, sleeping quarters, and restroom access between males and females. Supporters say it was about student safety, though critics say it unfairly targeted transgender individuals. Backers of the new bill say the original unintentionally barred firefighters from using restrooms, changing rooms, and sleeping quarters of the opposite gender. In some instances, male and female firefighters and police officials share sleeping quarters and restrooms. The example given was during the Sturgis motorcycle rally when the presence is higher. Proponents say House Bill 1161 cleans up the language on those provisions and keeps those instances legal in South Dakota. The bill next heads to the House floor. The House State Affairs Committee has killed a bill which would have capped costs connected to energy usage by data centers. This, despite concerns large-scale data centers could drive prices up for household energy bills. SDPB CJ Keene reports.
According to a congressional report, nationwide data centers, not including cryptocurrency operations, consumed approximately 176 terawatt hours of power. That's about 4.5% of total U.S. energy consumption. Sioux Falls Democratic Representative Aaron Healy brought the bill.
It is not an attempt to block economic development. Rather, it's a planning tool. It gives the legislature, utilities, and communities the time to study the impact of what this would have on our grid, on electric rates, and on local infrastructure before projects this size are moving forward.
That would be accomplished by imposing a moratorium on new data center construction in the state through June of 2027.
1301 takes a responsible approach to growth by promoting fairness, transparency, and protection for existing customers while we're still allowing thoughtful development. And most importantly, this bill reflects the outreach that we've received from South Dakotans on how to responsibly manage the data center issue that we have had in our state.
Some proponents of the bill contend attempting to battle data centers at the local level was a futile effort. However, opposition say that's where that matter would be solved. Joe Fiala is Deputy Commissioner of the Governor's Office of Economic Development.
At a high level, a moratorium on data centers is not needed and limits opportunities for South Dakotans. There are already mechanisms in place to control the types of development in local jurisdictions, such as local zoning ordinances and city or county comprehensive plans.
The committee killed the bill on a vote of 10 to 2. I'm SDPB's CJ Keene.
A bill sponsored by Sioux Falls Democratic Representative Aaron Healy seeks to end solitary confinement for juveniles in the state. It was killed by the House Judiciary Committee. While opponents say small steps towards reform are preferable to large changes, parents and professionals say that will leave behind a generation of troubled youth. Hear the voices of those directly involved in their own words.
So South Dakota is actually one of the four states in the nation that doesn't have any legal limits on solitary confinement. So what House Bill 1276A does is seek to change that by establishing clear rules for the use of solitary confinement in our state's juvenile facilities. This bill restricts solitary confinement to last resort safety situations. It limits its use and duration, requires oversight and reviews, protects access to services and family contact, and ensures transparency through documentation and notification. I also really want to note what this bill does not do. It does not eliminate isolation entirely. In true emergencies where a child poses an immediate danger to themselves or others, confinement can be used. But what it does do is prohibit the use of confinement for retaliation, punishment, or administrative convenience. This legislation is about protecting our most vulnerable children. Children are not adults, and punishing them as adults can create real harm, real and lasting harm. Their brains, their emotions, and behaviors are still developing. And the research on this is very clear. Solitary confinement is extremely harmful to children. Many youth in detentions have already experienced trauma, abuse, neglect, or severe instability, and isolation compounds that trauma, and isolating youth dramatically increases suicide ideation and self-harm behaviors. Solitary confinement also disrupts critical brain development at the time when children need stability and support, and many experts, including the American Academy of Pediatrics, agree that solitary confinement is unsafe and inappropriate for children.
Thank you very much. And we have Lacey Hubers.
Please proceed. Thank you so much. Thank you for this opportunity to speak. I wanted to be there in person, but my son is being released from detention today, and so I wanted to be home for that. So thank you for allowing me to join remotely. From an early age, our bright son had behavior issues. We took him to counselors, psychiatrists, and doctors who prescribed him medications. After several encounters with law enforcement, he was committed to the Department of Corrections. He ended up in juvenile detention. He acted out, he got into fights, and he was punished with solitary confinement. Two summers ago, our son was in a fight while at JDC and was sent to confinement for what ended up to be nearly 4 weeks. During that time, he never went outside, ate all his meals in a small cell, and was brought out of cell for 1 hour a day for hygiene and showering. After a few days of this, he became suicidal. He told me that he didn't see a point in living anymore. He had given up. He was then put in another cell with a safety blanket and nothing else. He was checked on by mental health professionals until he was deemed stable enough to go back into confinement again. Instead of making him more compliant, it made him more belligerent and unwell. This cycle was repeated a few times. Finally, he was accepted into a psychiatric treatment program. While at this program, I was told by staff that they never use confinement because it's harmful and traumatizing. His counselor there told me he was suffering from PTSD due to his confinement.
Further discussion.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Roby.
Substitute motion, 41st day.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion to move this to the 41st day by Representative Roby and a second by Representative Fitzgerald. Comments?
Just a short comment. They have a very, very difficult job, and they are handling some very violent offenders. And I know that in their hearts they are doing the best job that they can. And I don't think we need to set out any more mandates for any facilities or any counties to be responsible for. So I would just urge everyone to agree and move this to the 41st day. Thank you.
Yes, Representative Mortensen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm going to be supporting this 41st day motion, but I do want to say this, and I want to hold pretty firm across the standard that I've set, I think, through this whole session of how we make substantive changes, and it's usually with the people carrying it out. And I want to say that because I think that the folks bringing this bill, the legislators who have been in contact and been working, have been reaching out, and I want to say a lot of other states have figured this out, I think probably in conjunction. I mean, the folks who are advocating for our juveniles who are really going through tough times, but also, in a lot of cases, really putting other juveniles or the staff that we've heard from in harm's way. I mean, this is a very tricky subject. And so my very sincere request and, frankly, expectation would be that the folks we heard from today work with the folks that are bringing this legislation on the kinds of procedures and the kinds of guardrails that they can implement without an undue cost burden.
The bill was killed on a vote of 11-2.
Legislative coverage on SDPB is supported by the South Dakota Bar Foundation, SDN Communications, Missouri River Energy Services, and your membership in the Friends of SDPB. Thank you.
In a split decision, the South Dakota Supreme Court rules in favor of the state in a dispute over access to businesses during a Sioux Falls road construction project. It's centered around a major redevelopment of the I-29 41st Street interchange a few years ago. The Gustafson family owns property along 41st Street. They sued the State Department of Transportation when the project cut off the closest access point to businesses on their property. A circuit court ruled in the Gustafson's favor. The DOT appealed. The Supreme Court reversed the lower court in a 3-2 decision. The majority opinion says the state had authority over that access point due to a deal made with the previous owner back in 1958.
And that's your daily news update. Make sure to follow us on Facebook, X, and YouTube at SDPB News, and visit sdpb.org/news to stay up to date on our journalism as it comes in. As always, thanks for listening.